possible. Go ahead. Petrus Hashem, Rus, Perik Aleph, Pasuk Chav. Sorry, Pasuk Yudtes. We finished with the dramatic exchange between Naomi and Rus, and now we're moving on. Okay, so Pasuk Yudtes. Batelachno Shtehen, they went together. Ad boyono beis lochem, until they came to beis lochem. Now, Rashi says the Chazal note, "Vatelachno shtehem." The word shtehem is superfluous. It could have just said "Vatelachno ad boyono beis lochem," right? So Rashi says that the pasuk is stressing the chavivus of a ger tzedek. Shtehem is implying. Like we're putting them together, we're equating them. Now they're in the same class. Up till now there's Rus and Naomi, now they're in the same class. Naomi from one of the most aristocratic families of Klal Yisrael, and Rus who is now fresh off the boat from Moab. Until they came to Beis Lechem, Vayehi ki vayono Beis Lechem, as they arrived in Beis Lechem, Vateyhoim kol ha'ir aleihem. The whole city was in a tumult over them. Vateymarna, and they said, Hazois Naomi, is this Naomi? Now, what does that mean? Like the whole entire city came out to see the sight. It doesn't sound very nice. But Chazal tell us that what was going on at this time was Hashem, the architect of history, synchronized the death of the wife of Boaz, who is destined to become the husband of Ruth, with Naomi and Rus's arrival back in Eretz Yisrael. They entered Beis Lechem as the Levaya of Boaz's wife was going on. And therefore, yes, they came and they suddenly were greeted by the whole crowd. They walked in to this Levaya. And that's why, yeah, there was such a public spectacle because everybody was there. Right? And they became the center of the focus. And they said, Hazois Naomi, this was shocking because she was from the wealthiest, most aristocratic families. It says that, Chazal say that her maidservants were dressed in the finest satins. And she never went anywhere without a whole entourage of women attending to her, etc. This is like the top of society. Okay? And now she's coming back alone, not even like normal people would travel in a caravan, right? Alone, wretched, on foot, also sickly. And everyone was in shock. This is Naomi. Vatomer aleihem. So she said to them, Al tikreno li Naomi. Don't call me Naomi. Kreno li Moroch. Naomi is from the root Ni'imus, beauty, pleasantness. There's nothing pleasant in my story. Just forget that name. Kirenoli Mora, call me Mora, call me bitterness. Kehemal Shakai Limoi, because Shakai has fed me a lot of bitterness. Widow, lost her children, lost all her wealth. She's now a pauper, right? And in a terribly wretched state. Ani. Malvin says that she's stressing. Al tikreno Naomi, you know, eating. If you want to appreciate my downfall, you know, I said this woman used to be so wealthy. She said, "You don't even have to say that. Just look at my state now. Even if I wasn't wealthy before, it's enough to make for a very, very impressive sad story, even without the previous one. That's how bad it was." And now she says, "Ani maleo halachti." I went full. I had everything a woman could want. I went at the top of the world. Vereikom heshivani Hashem. And Hashem brought me back empty. Now the girl makes a big deal about the use of the name Hashem here. Because we would have thought that in this whole context, the name Elohim would be more appropriate. So talking about midas hadin, we're talking about punishment. We're up to where Rus and Nami are coming back into Eretz Yisrael. But the way she expresses it is, Reka meshivami Hashem. I went out full wealth, family, status, aristocracy, and Hashem is bringing me back completely empty. So the girl says, yes, this is midas harachamim. This is what she's saying. She is, what she's expressing here is the epitome of what we call tzidduk hadin, of accepting and acknowledging din shamayim. She said, I went out meleah, full. But you know what? I needed to learn a lesson. Because of our status, and because of our wealth, etc., we felt that we had the liberty to go off, to leave Eretz Yisrael. And you know what? The truth is that we were in danger, and this was really what was happening slowly but surely, we were in danger of being severed from Klal Yisrael. Right? And this is what was happening slowly but surely. Hashem, with His rachamim, dealt us one blow after the next. Now, as we saw earlier, the rest of her family didn't pick up on the signals, but she did. And she says, Heshivani Hashem. Hashem taught me this lesson and now is bringing me back to Eretz Yisrael. He gave me the merit to come back to Eretz Yisrael to try again, now that I've internalized the merit. So on the contrary, she's expressing this as Midas HaRachamim. Heshivani Hashem. She doesn't say just that Hashem fed her bitterness. Hashem is now bringing me back to Eretz Yisrael, giving me the opportunity to try again, having learned the lesson. And now I'll be able to live out the rest of my life properly.
She's not conscious that
she went full and
came back empty.
She's saying this emptiness was what gave me the jolts to realize that the whole, that it's time to come back, that something very wrong happened. And therefore she's relating to that as Midas HaRacham, Hashem Hashem. Lama tikra noli Nami, so she repeats, why should you call me Naomi, pleasantness? Hashem onobi, v'shakai herali. Hashem responded to my state, and shakai herali, meaning on a certain level, maybe on a lower level, shakai is not the same level of Shem Hashem, it looks like what happened was bad for me. But this was really Hashem responding with the response that I needed to hear. Naomi and Ruth, her daughter-in-law, came back with her. They came back from the fields of Moab. They came back now to Beis Lechem at the beginning of the barley harvest. They're coming back penniless and destitute. Nothing to their name. Now, Ulin Naomi Moida Leisha. Naomi had a close friend and relative of her husband. What's that?
That's
right. That's what Chazal tell us, and the Mepharshim say that they're inferring it from the pasuk. Would have said, you know, le'ishnami hayamayda. It doesn't say that her husband had a friend. It said, Nami had a friend of her husband. That's a funny way of saying it, right? Nami's husband had a friend would be the normal way to say it. Nami had a friend of her husband, right? The Nami meida le'isha, Nami had a friend of her husband, is implying that there was a relationship between him and her as well. Like we said the other week. She was actually his first cousin. Naomi was his first cousin. Elimelech, her husband, was her uncle. Elimelech and Boaz's father, Salmon, and Plonya Amoni, the one that's coming up later. And what did we say the fourth one was?
Their father.
Naomi's father.
Boaz's father.
Boaz's father. Elimelech.
Plonya Amoni.
And Plonya Amoni, that's right. They were all four of them were brothers. Ish gibor chayim mimishpachas Avimelech. He was a man of great valor, meaning he was a very successful man in all areas. Chayim also specifically denotes in Ruchnius. More, the Malbim notes that chayim has a specific connotation of not being affected by money. He's a very wealthy man. But if you remember, right, when Yisro is laying down the qualifications of a dying, one of the things he asks for is achayo. A person who is not affected by money, isn't interested in money that isn't his, etc. Or whatever it is, like that. Money is not a big factor by him. This is being stressed here for a reason. Mishpachas Elimelech. Ushmoy Boyas, his name was Boyas. Now, why is this being stressed here? So, in a minute, we're going to see about Ruth going out to collect, along with the Anim, to collect Leket, to collect the Matnis Anim. The question that the Mefarshim raises, where's Boyas? Boyas is a very wealthy man, right? And an aristocrat. He's basically in the same class as Elimelech, her husband, was. And we're saying here that he was a close relative. Why isn't he supporting them? So, the Malbim says that it's for that reason. The Malbim says that it's for that reason that we stress on Echayil here. Don't think that it's because he was just too stingy. That's not what was going on here. What was going on, and what's really coming up in this parak, is we're just starting parak base. What's really we're going to see in this parak here is a beautiful display of Jewish finesse, character, and what we might call adinut, the finer nuances of Bein Odom L'Chaveiro. Naomi did not want to be supported. This is a point that a number of the Mefarshim make. The Malbim makes this point, Tigera Shmuel makes this point, and others make the point. This is how they lay it down. There are other explanations, maybe we'll cite them in parentheses, but this is most of the Mefarshim talk about this in Tagalog. Naomi did not want to be supported. She was a proud woman. She had been what she had been, right? She had been, like we saw earlier, she always went with a whole entourage of maidservants dressed in the finest satins. And she didn't want the indignity of being supported. She wanted to manage on her own. On the contrary, she wanted to collect matnas anim, as we're going to see soon. That was considered a legitimate form. This was what the anim were entitled to. And on the contrary, she said, this is Hashem's way of supporting me. I'm not going to be dependent on Boss of the Dumb. Boyas sensed this and he appreciated it. He respected it. He respected it. He didn't go and impose himself on her. He understood that no, it really is better for her and it's more of a benefit for her to be able to scrounge and to maintain her dignity and also her principles. Wanted to be supported by Hashem without Boss of the Dumb. So he respected it. And as the Malbim is going to point out soon, it itched him also. But he kept his distance. Now, Vatoymer Rus Hamoyavir. Now let's know, throughout this whole parak, we're going to see the fine nuances of the subtle Bein Odom L'Chaveiro. Let's see. Vatoymer Rus Hamoyavir El Nami. Rus Hamoyavir says to Naomi, El Chono HaSode, let me go out to the field, Ta'alakta B'shibali, and I will go pick ears of grain, of barley. Achar Asher Tzachem Be'inov, I'll go to the field and pick up after the workers of someone who I find favor in his eyes. V'taymelo, so she said to her, L'chi biti.
Go, my daughter.
What's that?
To find a husband.
What are we talking about? Finding favor in his eyes. So, what's happening here? Why is the pasuk stress that she was a Moabiah here in this context? Rus haMoabiah, right? We want you to remember she's a Moabite. So Rus is telling Naomi, "Let me go out. We if we want supper tonight, we need to do some collecting. Let me go out because you're already known in this area." And for you, it's going to be terribly humiliating to be out in the fields collecting with the Anim when you used to command all these fields. I'm a Moabiah. For me, it's not. She's assuring Naomi, let me do it, because for me, it's more comfortable than you. I'm a Moabiah. I'm a stranger. Nobody knows who I am. Let me go out, and I'll do the collecting for us. And she says, I'm going to go collect in a field of someone who will give me that grace. Simply understood, what she's saying is someone who won't mind, someone who will be okay with me collecting. And Moshe David Vali says that actually, Niba v'loyodo ma niba. She said, I'm going to go and collect in the field of the man who I'm going to find favor in his eyes. Ultimately, the man who's going to end up marrying her. Okay? But this was not her intent. Her intent was simply, I'm going to go to collect in a field of someone who will grant me that favor. Now, there's another nuance here. That the Rabbah points out. Why'd you have to say that? This is an entitlement of the Anir. Leket Shekhanpeh. She was going to see soon. She's following exactly the halachas of Leket. Why does she need the person who grants her that favor? So the Rabbah says something very profound. He says that even though, indeed, this was the entitlement of the Aniyim, he said, but nevertheless, it was Nahud, that people did not collect in the field of a person who they sensed, didn't want it, wasn't happy with them. This is really a pasuk in Mishlei. Al tilcham lechem tzar ayin. Don't eat the bread of a stingy person, even though he's offering it to you, or in this case, even more than that. He has to offer it to you. You're not even more than that. If you don't take it, it's not like he's going to keep it. But he's grudging about it, because he can't keep it. He's not allowed to. He has to be after it. But he's grudging about it. He's resentful. The Anin, with the more refined sensitivities, kept away from such fears. Why? So let's understand. This is a very, very profound point. It's like Reb Chaim Vital says, why aren't midas? If midas are so fundamental, since I'll talk about midas at great length, why isn't it in the Torah? You have to have this midah, you have to have that midah. The Torah doesn't talk about midas. What do you have to do? What you don't? What you shouldn't do? Why aren't midas discussed? This is a very, very famous Reb Chaim Vital. Reb Chaim Vital says, midas are the premise of Torah. The Torah, in its command, is talking to a person who it understands is in a certain place. In other words, the mitzvahs are supposed to reflect who the person is. And therefore, yeah, when the Torah lays down matnos anim, and it's, this is actually, when it comes to tzedakah, this is actually explicit in the Torah. Right? Right? Either Ramban or Rabbi Yehuda, I don't remember, maybe both of them say that it's not just enough not to close your fist. You shouldn't be callous, meaning part of the chiyuv is to be sensitive to the ani, not just to give him money. Right? In other words, the Torah wants the tzedakah to be coming from a place of generosity, a place of empathy. Right? That is the healthy system of the Torah. Now, if a person doesn't feel it, is he potter? Certainly not. And on the contrary, you're supposed to use the mitzvahs, you can also use the mitzvahs backwards, right? It's supposed to be, actually it's supposed to be an ongoing process of the mitzvahs expressing your pneumias and also affecting your pneumias. And it should be, even if you do have that pneumias, the mitzvahs will affect it more and more, right? It's the famous klal. Well, whatever the case is, these people understood, and they were very attuned, that if a person is not in that matzah, this is not the healthy picture of matnei sanin that the Torah is talking about. And this is not where I want to be. I want to be in a situation where everyone's on the same page. Everyone's on the same page. By me taking from him, I'm actually giving him the feeling that the Torah wants him to have. Right? You want to be a part of this system that the Torah really intended when it ordained all these things. Right? Not just that I'm coming, I have an entitlement, I'm going to take it, and this guy is grudging and resentful. So therefore, no, she could be converted. She just might not be able to marry, yeah. But she's a Gyaris at this point. Yeah.
As the one who was and maybe she's hoping she going, she's a Gyar. And so the Lashon Unayim by Yisrael, by Yisrael Lanu Unayim, and Rashi there says that would be probably one of the gargal inayim to the person says atem asager. Maybe another should say you go, you'll get some amount. If I go, because in the system where gerim are loved so much,
maybe she'll get that much more.
She'll get more.
Ah, yeah.
It's a lashon inayim. Same lashon as by chovel in Avos.
Good, good, good. That's kishmak. So, vatelech, vatovoy, vatelakit, vasodeh, acharei apetcha. So she went off, and she arrived at the field, and she was picking the leket in the field. We'll get a little more into the specifics of leket, but she was picking leket in the field after the harvesters. Vayikera mikreho, and she happened to come about, come onto Chelkas HaSodeh LeBoyaz Asher Mimishpachas Elimelech. She came onto the field that belonged to Boyaz, right? This cousin of theirs. Shalom. So this whole Megillah also is a classic story of a talking Megillah, right? This also very much has the characteristic of Megillah's Esther, of what the Ramban calls Hashem operating his nisim, weaving them into Teva. What were the chances that the first field she'd stumble on, okay, it was Beis Lechem, it was the area of the family, but this is the harvest season, and there are, as we're going to see soon, there was harvesting going on all over the place. Hashem guided her straight to the field of Boyaz, because Hashem, as we already saw, Hashem's planning the timing that they should arrive exactly at the time that Boaz's wife passed away. And now, as she's going out to look for a place to pick leket from, Hashem guides her straight to the field of Boaz. Hashem is manipulating things carefully. He's taking her straight from the fields of Moav, guiding her without any stops on the way, basically, right? Guiding her straight to what we call Eim HaMalchus, the throne of the mother of the kingship of Klal Yisrael. So no other stops on the way. It could have taken her 3 weeks to arrive at that field and could pass other fields on the way. Hashem is busy. Hashem is busy.
But even though Hashem is busy, doesn't Hashem have to wait a month? Because Boaz is in the Vailas?
Had to wait more than that. Had to wait 3 months. Because a Geiris is not allowed to marry for 3 months until we can see if she has any previous. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's going to take some time until it actually happens.
Well, we don't know how long it took them to come after Beit Lechem. Okay, it could be this is this. They're leaving, then they're coming, but they're coming. And it still takes a few months journey to get here as well.
That's also true. The Malbim's notes that we are going to see indicated in the Pesukim soon that there was a delay. Things didn't happen immediately. The Malbim's going to say later that Naomi was counting the months. She was keeping track of how long it needed to take.
He wasn't time for Boaz to die yet.
What's that?
He was supposed to die right at. Like,
oh, you're referring to the Chazal that he that he was going to
miss. Yeah, you comment that they missed. Naomi arrived at the same time that Boaz's husband, Boaz's wife died.
Yeah.
She arrived at here in Beit Lechem.
Right.
Okay. So it wasn't 3 months. It doesn't matter how long it was
to wait. Oh, he's going to have to use it. He's going to have to wait that.
He has to wait 3 months.
He has to wait that time.
No, he has to wait.
He doesn't have to wait.
He has to wait 1 month.
Yeah. He has to wait. But
that's true. You have to wait 1 month.
What's that?
Can't marry her on the violin.
No, Gieris. Gieris, there are no assumptions.
Okay. Well, a lot of get married on the violin. They're like the rice and minnows.
I don't know.
Well, it's definitely halacha today, these days. You can't get married on the violin.
Okay, so now, and therefore the Malbim notes, it makes a big deal. I mean, we've discussed this often. The term in the pasuk, "Vayiker mikreho," right? The pasuk says, "Her happening happened to happen." It's a way of saying, right? It's like the mikre is being like double stressed. She happened to chance on, but it's even more than that. It's mikreho, vayiker mikreho. Her happenstance happened to come out to Boaz. So this is how Malbim says this here. Rav Hirsch stresses this elsewhere. In the psukim, the people are attuned, and in the usage of the psukim, mikra means something entirely different. This is how Rav Hirsch expresses it. The Malbim makes this point here at length. He says, in the minds of the great people of these days, there were things that I planned, There are two types of things that happen in life. Things that I plan and things that Hashem planned. Things, something that I plan, something that I plan. Something that Hashem planned is called a mikra. That's simply a way of saying something guided by Hashem. Right? What we, and we live in a world of mikra. Right? For them, the word mikra meant something Hashem ordained. Right?
So why do you make a big deal about mikra being an amalek word?
What's that?
I always say like, mikra is an amalek kind of word.
I guess in the common usage, also, tel chui mi bekeri, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like covet, right? Covet is one of the greatest things. It's also, we use it when it's being used wrong, right? But Rav Hirsch notes, this is brought out even stronger with Eliezer. When Eliezer davens to Hashem, what's his lashon? When he davens to Hashem, hakreina. Make it happen by chance. It's a very weird thing to say if you're thinking in terms of mikra the way we think of it. But these people, things were so clear in these people's eyes. Mikra means anything that happened that I didn't plan, they see Hashem at work. And this is just being expressed here in this passage. Vayikar mikreha. Har mikra was. What is har mikra? It's har hashgacha. Right? Har hashgacha guided her to the field of bayas. Now, Boaz came to Beis Lechem, came from Beis Lechem, he came to be involved with his fields, okay? And he said too, he greeted the workers there, he greeted the harvesters, he said, Hashem Imalchem. He says Hashem with Hashem's name. Imalchem.
What does it mean, Hashem's name?
What's that?
What did he say? He said you gave up.
I wonder if he did. I don't know.
I never was clear on that.
Right. What did they actually use in those days? I don't know. We see that when the Kohen Gadol used the shame, it was a very big deal. Everybody fell on their face. I don't know if that was only a mikdash sheni, maybe a mikdash tish. I don't know. It says Zeshmi Lailam Zezikhi Vedor Dor. I don't know. Whatever it is, in the least case, he said Adoy. Right, but actually is Hashem's name. And they replied with Hashem's name. You remember the Gemara in Brachos, right? You're reminded of the Gemara in Brachos that says that this is actually reflected a takana that was made at that time. The takana that people should use the name of Hashem when they greeted each other. There's a lot of profundity to this. The Meiri says that in earlier times, when everybody was, so before this time, right, what was before that? He says the purpose of this takana was Shem Shamayim Mugol. People should be conscious of Hashem all the time. Shem Shamayim should be a regularly expressed thing. What was before that? So the Meiri says, before that, this is the point that Rabbi Gamliel says, whenever you see some improvement that the, whoever it was at the time, Chazal and Shechnitz Chagdol, the earlier Naveen, an improvement that they instituted, it reflects a drop. It reflects a deterioration. Any epismila that they introduced was coming to respond to a certain drop. And therefore never assume that it reflected a step ahead. Right? So he said, the Mi'iri says, in earlier times, Hashem was, people were so conscious of Hashem that the covenant was that they never said His name. People were always in awe, and there was always a pachat to say Hashem's name, right? And as times deteriorated, especially if you remember, we mentioned Chazal said this is a dor sheshev with the sheftov. This was a time when people were not taking Torah leadership seriously, and standards were starting to deteriorate. This was a measure that they took to counter that. To Yerushalayim b'shem Adarabba. Now let's get people. Yeah. We want Hashem's name to become as much as possible a part of conversation. And therefore they were mitakin, say Hashem's name. Gemara calls this certain aspects of taking a step down in order to meet the needs of the time.
Boaz was born the second year ago of them coming into Israel. I mean, Moshe Benun was about 16 years old when Moshe Benun died. Right? So speaking, this is about
early as John.
This is about 80 years after the death of Moshe Rabbeinu.
After the death of Moshe.
So in that time period already, they're very, very similar to Canaanites.
Well, let's understand. Let's understand two things. First of all, we're not talking about all of the critical things that were said in those days have to be taken in their subtle perspective. We're not talking about Avodah Zarah, right? We're not talking about the real deterioration that we see later. They were very, very finely attuned to any small drop. And when it says that it was a Dor Sheshevet Sheftov, what Victor Miller points this out, it shows actually where you see this clearly, doesn't necessarily mean that it was Pashat Hefker free-for-all, right? And if you want to refute that the Navi actually does say Isha Yosha Be'in Ovi Aser, right? That itself is has to be taken in perspective. But Victor Miller notes this. He says, it doesn't mean everybody did what they wanted. What are the literal words? It means what it means literally. What are the literal words? Man did what was right in his eyes. It doesn't say everybody did what they wanted. He says, on the contrary, that was reflecting the greatness of the time of the Shaftim that caused certain problems. But it was a time when there was no central government, there was no monarch, and men lived with the system of Ish Hayashav Einov Yasa. Every man was felt enjoined to do what was right in his eyes. Now, you know what? Once or twice or three times, this caused problems. That isn't bad. Okay? People, some of the history writers like to point back to that as a time of anarchy. By the time the Jewish people got their act together, right? It took 400 years. Is that how long it was? That's how long it was approximately. 400 years until they got their first king, right? Other than that, it was like just a backward kind of matzav, tribal existence. But Victor Miller says, think about it realistically. The place would be in shambles. 400 years without a government, right? So those 400 years were a shining tkufa in the history of Klal Yisrael, where the Jewish, and Shmuel says this, right, when they asked for a king, Shmuel says, Hashem ul Malkichem. This is something that's expressed a number of times throughout that period that you don't see it expressed afterwards. Gideon says that, right, when they tell him they wanted to be their king, Hashem ul Malkichem. This was the system that was in place then. Ish Hayosha Be'inav, right? There were Shaftim, but there wasn't a central system, institutionalized matziv that they had control over the whole land. Right? It was a matziv of Ish Hayosha Be'inav. So, here also, yes, there was a certain deterioration that they were sensing. And on the contrary, they came to counter it with this takana, shalom, this takana of, let's step up the usage of Hashem's name in Klal Yisrael. Let's just apply this to its contemporary concepts, Baruch Hashem, Be'ezus Hashem, right? Appreciate that these things are not valueless. Right? These things are not valueless.
But we're careful not to say
Shem. Oh, so we're careful not to say Shem. No. Right. And the Ikra, really? You could, if you're not saying it with Hatalah. Right? But, okay, maybe we're actually getting the best of both worlds. Right? But appreciate this. Come away from this with an appreciation of that Baruch Hashem, Bezos Hashem, and Mitzah Hashem. These things mean something. And using them unconsciously already makes you a better person. But attempting to put a little more consciousness into these uses really puts you head and shoulders above. You don't need to be above other people, that's not the point. But it raises your head and shoulders above yourself. Okay? It raises you to a new level. To try to actually catch yourself when you're saying it and think, what does this actually mean? Right? Okay. So now, Vayemer Boaz Lenaroi Hanitzav Al HaKotzim. So Boaz says to his youth, who was overseeing the harvesters, Lamia Narazis, what's the story with this girl? Strange question, as Rashi notes. Why would he take interest in a girl? So, Rashi gives the classic explanation of Chazal, but I want to add to it the perspective that the Malbim gives. He gives the whole reality of Peah, Lekat Shikha, and Peah, brings us into the reality of it in a very profound way throughout this whole parak. Okay, even the fact that she was the tzniyus, is that necessarily something that a man should notice? Rashi tells us that what he noticed was her, the tzniyus with which she conducted herself. Well, we'll get into that soon, okay? And the knowledgeability that she conducted herself with. She was very meticulous. It says, leket, two ears that fall together. What's like a chicken peah? Let's just lay that down. Peah, because this is going to be important in what's coming up. The three matanas, matnoi sanim, you have to leave in the field when you harvest your field. Peah, you have to leave at the edge of your field, unharvested, whatever amount it is. Okay? A concentrated amount at the edge of the field. Leket and shikha were more circumstantial, not predictable. Leket was what dropped out of your hand as you're harvesting. Okay? Shikha is bundles that you forgot. When you were gathering the other bundles in, you forgot some behind. Those are more circumstantial. Now, the din is with leket that if you grab a handful and you cut it with the what's it called? Scythe. So a couple will drop out of your hand. Two ears that drop out of your hand are leket. If three drop out of your hand, that's already not, that's not hefker. That the owner can pick back up. Two ears he has to leave on the floor. Okay? So Rashi says that she was very meticulous about only picking up two that were falling together, not three. So these are the two things that he noticed about her. He noticed her diktuk in exactly what she's entitled to take, what she's not entitled to take. And he also noticed her tzniyus. Rashi says that she made a point of, you know, if it was high, she would lift it up. But when she had to bend down, she wouldn't bend over. She would always crouch down on her, go down like sitting position, rather than bend over. Her tzniyus. So we come back to the question. So that he is supposed to notice, right? So the Malbim gives a very, very profound perspective here. He says what's going on is like this. He says leket was the least popular of matnei sanim for the simple reason. Here's a picture he put together for the Malbim throughout this whole period. He says for the simple reason. First of all, he says peah was a large concentrated amount, okay, in one predictable spot. Even if it wasn't in one spot, but you knew where it had to be, right? Either there, okay? It was a large, predictable, concentrated amount in one spot, okay? Shikha was circumstantial, also a higher profit than leket. I was talking about a whole bundle. Leket was very haphazard. So he says, in general, people went for the peah. People went for the peah. And A and B, at the peah, there was a certain motive of survival of the fittest, right? It could sometimes get you know, pushing and elbowing and this and that. And he said, she adopted, kept away from the peah. And he said, the way it worked was, there was a rush for the peah, and then everyone moved on to a different field. And often, he said, for mice, the motive was that there was so much going on, there's so many fields, that there really was enough for everybody. So like, people didn't really have to be spending so much time. You saw that there was too much going on in this field, you moved on to the next field, and what people were really looking out for was the peah. She didn't want to be a part of the jostling, she didn't want to be a part of the whole elbowing matzav, and therefore she dafka went to the leket. And she took a different approach than everybody else. No ani spent too much time in one particular field. You joined the peah rush, and you moved on. Right? She was conspicuous in the fact that she spent the whole day in that field, meticulously following the harvesters, and as they drop things, picking them up. You also understand that it's painstaking, right? And you're not going to come up with that much that fast. But if you go about it very meticulously and persistently, you end up with a nice amount. Right? She's the only one. She doesn't really have competition. Okay? So she's the only one busy with the leg. She didn't want to be involved with the pay. So this already stood out. Now, in addition, she's not with the others by the peah, and by the time Boaz shows up, she's already collected for herself a whole pile, which was also surprising, because leket was, like we said before, was haphazard, circumstantial. People weren't usually gathering big collections of leket. Okay? So, here's this girl kind of operating by herself. She's not in the peah area. She has a whole pile of produce. This already drew attention. And Memela, he also took note of the fact that how meticulous she was being and her hanhaka. But that wasn't what, you know, it wasn't what Joy, what Joy's attention was simply the fact that she really stood out. She really stood out in this way.
The other thing she had in Shiddush that other Gnosis Sorrow didn't do.
Oh,
it's just that she, I mean, because like that, if a woman comes wearing a burqa and we say, oh, this is much more fun. Like, oh. What could a Moabite come to teach Gnosis Sorrow?
So Reb David is asking, Reb Moshe David Vali asks, and then he said, Reb Moshe David Vali asks this question. He says, he was taken by her tznius. When do we expect this to be tznius as a characteristic of Gnosis Sorrow? So Reb Moshe David Vali says a very profound point. He says, yeah, but not when you're scrounging for food. Not when you're scrounging for food. Not when you need to scrounge for food. When you're wondering what you're going to have to eat a little later, it all goes out the window. And therefore, in the realm of the people collecting Matnos Anim, it was common to see people dropping their dignity. And the fact that somebody was maintaining the full Hanhaga of dignity in the tznius was a chiddush. And then he adds an interesting twist. And he says, and you know where it came from? This is a funny thing to say because it kind of sounds counterintuitive. Does he know where it came from? Because it came from her regal background. If you remember, she was a princess. Right? She was a princess. Navi princess, but a princess. So it came from her regal background. She was not going to be quick to just drop her dignity, even in these compromising situations. And the Meister Venko Galinsky tells him when he was in Siberia. So he said that he was, you know, Stalin sent there anybody who had half a distinction in the earlier times. So he said that there was an old general who was with him in Siberia. He said every night, in the middle of the night, he would get up. Somehow he managed, he had his uniform with him, his old uniform from the olden days. He said he would get up in the middle of the night, put on his uniform and salute, and then he would get up, take it all off and put it back. And Ivanka Ligolinsky once caught him in the act, and he told Ivanka Ligolinsky, I don't want to forget who I really am. He said this gives him a chiyus that he still actually is in his uniform every night. Now, what makes this a little interesting is that this is being said, Chazal are putting this in the perspective of a shvach, of a praise for Ruth. But if this is the pshat, then is it necessarily a shvach? Now, Rabbi Shadavid Bali himself is putting it into a very glowing description of her. Here's how I understand it. He doesn't say this, but this is how I understand it. The way I understand it is that what is this dignity? What's tznius? What's tznius? Tznius doesn't begin and end with, make sure you're covered, right? This is a big discussion, why this is especially appropriate to women. But the whole concept of tznius is about tznius, right? Hatznea leches in elekecha. Now, what does hatznea leches in elekecha mean? It means don't live a life of on the outside. Your life should be lived on the inside, right? Where the things that you're doing are a private business between you and Hashem. The point is not so much the concealment as much as it should be going on the inside. It's more positive than negative, right? Just for example, the Gemara says that even things that are done by koyle koyles should be done by hatsnea. Now, but the way he explained this was, a person is, how do you do that b'tzina? I don't want anybody to know that I'm doing it, right? I do mitzvahs b'tzina. You dance in front of the chasam and kala, I don't want anybody to know that I'm doing it. You call them into a side room, you put a mask on your face, and that's how you do it b'tzina. Rav Gamliel said, the point is, there might be 10,000 people watching you, but what's going on inside you? This is an effect between me and Hashem. Meaning the private level of what's going on is much greater than the public level. What's the name of the bigger mountain than Everest, just that it's under the sea in Japan? What's the name of it?
It's the deepest trench, you mean?
No, mountain. What?
Mountain.
No. There's a mountain that's taller than Mount Everest, except that.
No, that's a trench. Yeah, but there's a mountain.
Yeah, my daughter told me the name. What's that? It comes up, so it doesn't. It's not as high above Mount. Okay, right. I forgot. My daughter told me the name. For a while, I remembered it, but you know what? Here is a case of what's the concept of Atznala? There's another tefa. Where, sure, there's a big mountain rising over the sea and everybody sees it, but there's so much more that's beneath the surface. That's the main stress of Atznala Chetan Eli Tefa. The main point is not nobody knows what's going on. There is that too, and that often is needed. But the main point is there should be that much more, or that much going on the beneath the level, beneath the surface level, which is just you and Hashem. Ah, that ties into the discussion. It's a big discussion that branches out to a lot of places. But whatever the case is, ultimately, this is really a big discussion. Right. We're not going to get into that sugya now. But it is a tie into this sugya. But the point is that what Tzniyus really has, the point of Tzniyus as indignity comes from a place of being very, very connected to opinions. Very connected to your own inner value. Really, that's the concept of kavod, right? We talked about this in the Joshua the other week. Kavod is that very strange paradox of kavod is a value and kavod to be avoided. Kavod is something that Chazal bent over backwards to preserve, while at the same time they're telling you it's dangerous for you, run away from it. Yeah, and you're allowed to be over the rabbanans in order to preserve your kavod, because human kavod abrius is something very, very great. Bad, it's good, what's the story? Right? So, and this is really what I meant before, and it's a covet. When we talk about bad covet, it's really a misnomer for the true concept. Covet means being connected to your true inner reality. When a person is living with the consciousness of who he really is, there will be a dignified behavior. And we take... Yeah, that's it.
Right. So, yeah, Dan's right. It's not Japan.
It's not Japan.
It's Hawaii. It's Hawaii. Oh. Mauna Kea.
Yeah.
It's a mile higher than Everest. When you start from its base on the bottom of the seafloor.
A mile higher than Everest. That's significant.
Right.
That's my illustration of Hatzniyah Alech as Okay. So, what Kavod is relating to the inner reality of something. Okay? The Mechaber the Talmud Chacham, it's because you're relating to the inner value who is. It's not an issue of Ben Adam Lachaveru. Right? It's an issue of, as Jews, we are supposed to be living connected to the spiritual reality that's behind the surface. And therefore, we're going to be relating in different ways to things that aren't what their just physical being calls for. Right? Therefore, yeah, when you see another person, you relate with reverence because you understand that you're dealing with the Torah and the Latin. It's not an issue of making the other person feel good. That's another machaber, it's a separate subject. Kavod is, we might call it the essence of living as a Jew in this world, is kavod. It's being connected to the spiritual, operating in the physical world, but relating to the spiritual reality behind the physicality. And therefore, yeah, you might... relating to things in the way seem incongruous to what they are just in the physical sense. You know, usually, talking in the physical world, you cow before 7 foot, 300 pound football player. You don't cow before a bent over 90-year-old Torah sage, right? The covet is you understand what's actually here behind the beneath the surface, and you're in awe. And therefore, covet toward yourself is a very important part of it. The nefesh ula kevodi, right? The man is a mechal kavod. What's kavod? It's the nefesh. It's another term for kavod. Because that's your inner value. That's the inner value of who you are. This is a big discussion. I'm saying it now in a very inadequate way, just kind of introducing the concept. But the bottom line is that what kavod really means is relating to the inner value of something, not to the externality. That is kavod. By the way, if you want to tie it into Sphira, just once we're on the subject, and once we committed not to finish, my Rebbe explained, Rishloi Yaakovson, that the Pshat is, they were mevater on the cover. They were mevater on the cover because they wanted to just focus on the Emes and Torah, forget the cover. Right? But no, that's a sacrilege because that is stripping your own existence of what it's meant to be. You have to be attuned to the immensity of what a Tzelem Elokim is because it's a sugya in Ben Adam L'Makom. If you're operating with Hashem the whole time, even though he's behind the scenes, you have to be attuned to his whole system that's behind the scenes. And that includes that every Jew around you is a Tzelem Elokim. It's not Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, it's Ben Adam L'Makom. It's also Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. And certainly, if you're not going to relate to a person with kavod, you will also be over on another machaveir. Let's come back to Rus. Here's how it seems clear to me that this is what Moshe David Bali means. You talk about an ordinary pauper girl. You expect her to act with dignity, even though she has to be fighting with a whole bunch of other paupers in order to get that leket. And you tell her, do you appreciate who you are? She doesn't. It's a big avodah. She has to go to many shiurim and do a lot of talking to herself in order to appreciate that she's a lot more than just that penniless person who everybody brushes aside. Not so easy. Ruth came into her poverty well equipped. She had been a princess. She already had the basis to be able to know what appreciation of self-worth is. And this provided her with, now that she's moving into the role of, unlike the other girls who were born into it, and they might have had their teacher yelling at them, "You're a bas melech, you're a princess, this is how you act," right? So she just knew that's another thing you want to avoid, right? Leave me alone with the princess bit. She knew what it was to be a princess. She had been a princess. She was a princess. She knew what dignity was. When she now understood that she's moving in, as we say, lachzeis tachas kante Hashchina, to become a daughter of Hashem, she had the kelim, she had the basis to appreciate what that meant and to bear herself accordingly. This is my guess of what Rav Moshe David Vali means in incorporating into her shvach that, and was coming from the place that she had been a princess in Mayot. And this was the tzmius that she was manifesting. No, she was never going to turn into a chaya, because she knew what regality meant.
Is there any kind of steer in that idea, and the idea that she was somehow a tikkun for Lot's eldest daughter? You know, it was like the opposite of tzniyus.
Okay.
Right, the mob is... it brings in the Thorios, which David HaMelech needs, which is to enable that to get into Am Yisrael. She needs to overcome where she came from with her tzniyus. So that's why she's tzniyus.
But you're saying now that it's natural.
You're making it sound like it's right. This is how every princess is.
Okay. So the truth is that no, we have to differentiate. There's two different things. Look at history, right? A woman can be an aristocrat and have a very deep sense of value, and yet, when she's in her circles, she's capable. Her aristocracy will make her keep her regal bearings when she's around common folk. But when she's in her own circles, then her moyaviyut can come out, right? So we can differentiate between the two. A princess can be a princess, and she could still be a moyavi, right? And we'll actually see that momentarily, a very interesting manifestation of that point itself. Well, okay, let's just finish another. Yeah, right. So now, so Bayaz asks, who is this girl? Vayan hanar hanitzav ala koitrim vayoyma. So the man in charge of harvester says, Nara Mayavihi, she is a Mayavi girl. Hashavim Nami Nisteir Mayav. Everybody heard that Nami showed up, so she came with a sidekick. She had a Mayavi girl with her. So, Vatoyma Halakta no Vosafti Baamorim Achrei Akoytzin. And yeah, she's been busy with this all day. She said she had this idea of going to after the harvesters. She had a different business approach than the other aniyim, like I said before. I'll be gathering bundles after the harvesters. Vatovay Vataamoid Meoza Boiker Vadato. And yeah, she's been going back and forth the whole day, meticulously, like a different ethic than all the other aniyim, right? She's sticking to this field, back and forth after the harvesters. And you're seeing her relaxing now, but this is the first time she did it today. She's been busy the whole day. Malbim said that he was also explaining, because it looked strange that she, not from the peah, she would have gathered a whole pile. It's impossible to just come, show up, and gather so quickly a whole pile of leket, unless you were just taking freely. So the Nahar is explaining to Boaz, no, don't suspect her of just grabbing. She's been busy the whole day, and she meticulously put together a pile of leket. So Vayomer Boaz el Rus. So Boaz said to Rus, Halei shamat biti. You heard that this, the man in charge here, the foreman, related to you, this is a Malbim's place, related to you understandingly. You never know, when you're going to be running around to all kinds of different fields, you might get yourself into trouble, this, that. You put yourself into a compromising situation here because he could have been accused of stealing. You heard he related to you understandingly. So he tells her, I'll tell you, we'll cut this so they after. Don't go to any other fields. Don't leave this field. You stay here, collect your leket from my field only, and stick with my girls. Meaning, there were jobs that they were the boys doing, the harvesting. And I don't know, maybe the girls were threshing, maybe they were, I don't know what they were doing. Boaz is admonishing her here. He's telling her, first of all, he's being generous with her. Saying, I want you to do all your collecting here, and he's going to actually be very generous with her momentarily. And he's also telling her, you shouldn't be following the harvesting boys and picking behind them as they're going. Stay with the girls, and I'm going to set it up for you. You're going to have plenty. The Malbim says, very interesting. He says, she was not accustomed to Jewish standards, and where she came from, a girl didn't necessarily keep away from the boys. Right? And he's telling her, now he's kind of like gently telling her, don't do that. Stick with the girl workers. You'll be one of them, and you'll be able to pick whatever leket you want. I'll tell you what to do. And very interesting, the Malbim, we'll see later in the parak, the Malbim actually says that she didn't, this was so new to her that she didn't even pick up on what he was telling her. She didn't even get it exactly. We'll see later.
But she's going to have to continue with leket, or because, in other words, that's what a leket is. And the naros are, that's what they're doing knitting.
No, they're in the field. There's a team of girls in the field, but doing other jobs. So he's going to tell her, stick with the girls, do your leket a little differently. He's going to tell her how. That you're not mamish walking along watching as they're dropping. What had she been doing? Right? She's watching to see when someone drops two things, she picks it up. So she's mamish tailing them. Right? That's what the Malbim says. So he's telling her, okay, yeah. So now, Einayich basode asheik tzayrum v'olach tachrehem. Keep an eye on them, meaning you stay with the girls, watch from a distance as they harvest, and then go afterwards. And when you see them dropping things, go pick it up. Okay? You can make yourself comfortable, you can go among the bundles and take freely. Nobody's going to be watching you and stopping you, because again, this is unusual. Okay, you want to pick leket, but there's all kinds of bundles that they're gathering there, and they're suspicious. I'm going to tell everybody to just keep away from you. You do your thing. Mitzamis? Now note, he's all still sticking with the standards of leket. He understands that she still doesn't want to just take, right, take whatever you want. Even though he's going to set it up that way. But you only want leket, you'll only take leket. Okay? With some meat, so when you're thirsty, they withdraw water for the workers. Take freely water. That's already all he's doing here. He's not granting her something. He's a tarz. Water is hefker, just so it's a bother to draw it up. He's saving her that work. What they draw, you have a right to go drink. Okay. Okay, we're going to... Right, we'll stop here. But whatever it is, he's telling her, stick it with my field. Stick with my field. He wants her to stay here. But Malvim says that the idea was, as we said earlier, he was interested in helping Nami. And as soon as he's told, he already picked up, well, this is Nami's girl. He was interested in helping Nami. He didn't have the means of doing it. Therefore, he's telling her, only pick here, and he's going to set it up such that she'll have amply what she wants. He'll be able to now provide for them, even while keeping it to Nami's desire to just keep the two matnoi samim. Okay. That's it, Hashem. I hope over 3 years in Shavuos time to get as close as we can to the end. We know that.